Welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators of Colorado, but also a pastor and a father of five. And it's good to have you tuned in with us today on the broadcast. And today, folks, talking about the H.R. 45 Blair-Holt Licensing and Record Act of 2009. It will make it illegal to own a firearm in America unless it's registered with a database in Washington, D.C. As a gun owner, you'll have to be fingerprinted, and you'll be required to provide your driver's license number, social security number. You must maintain a valid address at all times. Each update will cost you $25. So here we are, licensing firearms. If this thing passes, they tried this bill last year, as I remember, but they failed to pass it. But they could get closer with this. I understand Illinois has a similar bill that they've been working on.
The Illinois bill is even perhaps more nefarious because the Illinois bill is trying to get rid of guns by requiring you to purchase insurance, liability insurance, in case that gun is used or abused or misfires or something, someone gets hurt by it. But they want to require you to purchase insurance if that gun is used, say, in a felony. Now, what insurance company in the world is going to issue liability insurance in case you want to go off your neighbor?
There might be some guy named Louie who's got a prison record who might be willing to carry that insurance for you.
I think his insurance is he won't shoot you if you pay him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on in the United States of America? The USSA, that's right, United Socialist States of America. And here's a very interesting organization. I actually appreciate these guys, the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. JPFO, the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and they've been putting together a history of gun control for a number of years. I ran into these guys, I think, back in the 1980s. They've been around a long time. But they've put together a collection of all of the governments that instituted hardcore gun control measures. And Turkey, for example, imposed it on the Armenians back in 1911. There was an Article 166 Penal Code and a proclamation of 1911 where permits were required, and they banned possession, eventually, of firearms in Armenia. And the consequence, of course, 1.5 million civilians killed in Armenia in one of the absolutely worst bloody pogroms ever imposed upon a nation. Well, then, of course, you had the Soviet Union, Resolutions 1918, and a decree that came out in July 12, 1920, Article 59 and 182, licensed owners of firearms, and eventually banned possession of firearms, and the end result there were 20 million civilians killed between 1929 and 1945. Then again, the Nazis imposed some controls on weapons registration and licensing in 1928. That was prior to the Nazis taking power in Germany under the law on firearms and ammunition. That was the Registration and Licensing Act of 1928. And then you had a weapon law of March 18, 1938, and more regulations against Jews in 1938, banning possession of firearms. And the results, of course, of that government being 20 million Jews and others, gypsies, critics, political opponents, etc., killed by the Nazi government between 1933 and 1945. Then you had nationalist China banning guns in 1914 and 1935 again, and 10 million Chinese killed between 1927 and 1949. Red China also banned guns in 1951 and 1957, imposing the death penalty on those who supplied guns, and they wiped out 20 to 35 million. And on it went. Guatemala did the same thing. Uganda, you remember Idi Amin, he required the registration of guns and the ownership of guns, prohibited carrying of guns, and banned guns on various decrees between actually 1932 and 1964, but eventually between 1960 and 1981, another couple hundred thousand people wiped out. Also, the Cambodians did the same thing under the Khmer Rouge, and Rwanda did the same thing in 1979, resulting in 800,000 Tutsi people being murdered, massacred in 1994, in the most recent bloody pogrom. And there you have a total of something like 150 million people in the 1900s wiped out by their own governments, largely because of the banning of firearms.
Oh, but think of all the lives that were saved by accidental shootings. There's probably at least a dozen lives.
There had to have been at least 12 people killed in accidental shootings somewhere in that decade or those decades. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of people are going to say, yeah, but that's going to happen in Armenia. That happened with the Soviet Union and the Germany and China and these nations. But you know, it would never happen here. Why? Because we Americans, our governments are far more righteous. We are way, way better people. It would never happen here. You know, Dave, I'm having a hard time believing that. I want to believe it. I want to believe in the essential goodness of man. And you know, maybe we've gotten to be better in the last 30 years or 50 years or 100. Maybe we've improved. Maybe man's nature has improved to the point where he would not slaughter hundreds of millions of his own people.
If man's nature has improved, then there's no reason to ban the guns, is there? I mean, because you could trust your neighbor with the gun if man's nature has improved.
Good point. But then again, who should own the guns? Maybe only the nice government people ought to own the guns. Maybe it should be just the Idi Amins and the German Nazis. I mean, maybe just the nice people, the nice government people should own the guns, or the criminals. But not everybody. Certainly everybody should not own guns. Just the nice government people should own the guns. Again, we're going back to the basic nature of human beings here. And we're testing. You're testing our listening audience right now. Ladies and gentlemen, what kind of anthropology do you maintain? Do you really believe that these nice government people in Turkey and the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany and Red China and Guatemala, Uganda, Cambodia, and Rwanda, you really think these nice people are really decent in heart? Or do you think that maybe they've got hearts that are wicked above all things and desperately wicked?
You know, I keep thinking about Waco, Texas. You remember the Branch Davidians?
Yeah.
You remember. There was
tanks. They had all those tanks around. And
well, the BATF.
Right, the BATF.
Your benevolent government. Federal dictatorship, which is a little bit concerned that there might have been a lot of guns inside there and possibly some child abuse. And because the benevolence of our federal government was in charge, they burned the place down and killed all the children.
They burned all the kids, yeah. And that's child abuse.
For the children. For the children.
For the children, yes, of course. For the children. Yeah.
So, you know, I think your federal government is actually capable of some rather inhumane, unjust things.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, who should own the guns? Nice government people? Criminals? Or let's just say everybody. We're going to be back in just a moment to talk about a biblical perspective on guns and violence. Be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. Dave's with me, too.
Christian Home Educators of Colorado is pleased to sponsor the annual Homeschool Day at the Capitol on Friday, April 3rd. Join home educators from around the state as we focus on this year's theme, In God We Trust. Activities include a noon rally on the west steps of the Capitol, workshops for all ages, and the Future Statesman Track. Support homeschooling in Colorado. Doors open at 9 a.m. at the Pillar of Fire Church, 1340 Sherman Street in Denver. Register online at chec.org.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org. Welcome back to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson talking about these attempts on the part of the federal government to register all guns and possibly even confiscate guns. And the end result, my friends, is more violence. I'm sorry, but violence is what governments do, and violence is what bad guys have done from the beginning. And the Bible actually opens up the ownership of violent weapons to all people. In fact, Jesus turned to his disciples and said, go get a sword. Yeah, you need to have a sword. You need to protect yourself. You need to be taking good care of your families. You need to be able to defend your families from those that would wrong them. And we have examples of great Christians and great men of faith throughout the scriptures who engaged in violence. I mean, Abraham went and captured his family, part of his family, Lot, his nephew, and his family from marauders, those evil men, wicked men, who had captured all of these people and had tried to enslave them and stole their things. Well, Abraham went after them, and of course, Abraham and his people in the process wound up killing people. I mean, Abraham, the godly father of faith that all of us look to, I think Jews and Christians look to this man as a godly man of faith, he killed people, as did David. And John the Baptist turned to soldiers, and he didn't tell them to quit. He says, just, you know, do not tyrannize or don't do violence to any man. So the point being, don't tyrannize innocent people. If you're going to be working in the armed forces, be careful not to tyrannize other men. Moreover, Paul also said that if he was done anything worthy of death, that he ought to die. He ought to die the death. And thereby, I think, confirmed the importance of capital punishment on the part of the civil magistrate. But also in Romans chapter 13, the government does not carry the sword in vain, but is God's avenger of evil. The civil government is intended to establish God's system of righteousness and hopefully use the sword on the bad guys. So this is a basic biblical perspective of things. Moreover, in Exodus chapter 21, we're told that if someone breaks in the night, it's appropriate for a person to defend his own household, and if blood is shed, so be it. There ought not be any blood shed for him. So there's strong, strong biblical precedent and, I think, encouragement to the use of violence at points. And certainly we have the example of Abraham and David and others who engaged in violence and did it for the glory of God. So it is appropriate, Dave, I think, to stand up against what I would call the bad guys. Now, I would break down the bad guys into six forms. Gangs. There are gangs, guys that come together in groups and tyrannize innocent people. These are gangs. There are lone perps or lone perpetrators that just go out there and they steal and they kill and they rape and they do nasty things to people. These are lone perps. And then we have petty tyrants. These are just local tyrants, might be bureaucrats, might be police officers that violate the freedoms of innocent people and wind up in the process stealing their money and killing their people. So you have petty tyrants. You also have terrorists, and these are people who come usually over your borders. They might be even within your borders, and they engage in random acts of violence. Oftentimes they're organized. Then you have foreign invaders and then mega tyrants, and the mega tyrants being the very worst because they have full opportunity in many cases, as in the case of Stalin and Mao and Hitler and others. They have tremendous opportunity to engage in violence against hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions of people. Why? Because they're not lone perps, because they have tremendous amount of power at their disposal thanks to the democratic offering of that power to some tyrant. Or sometimes it's a dictator who grabbed the power himself, but the power was somehow centralized, and he was enabled to work tremendous acts of violence against people. Well, these are the bad guys, and I think it's appropriate for the good guys to stand up against the bad guys. And that's my perspective.
I think that the framers of our Constitution, especially of the Bill of Rights, understood that no civil government will have perfect peace or will have perfect justice. So although the government's job is to get the bad guy, it's going to be a very imperfect task that they're called to do. Bad guys will get away all the time, and there will consistently be bad guys. And so that is the purpose, in my understanding, of the Second Amendment. It is to neutralize the bad guy. Yeah. You'll have fewer bad guys on the margin if there's houses that are armed, and you'll have fewer tyrants if the people are armed. Now, instead of respecting what the framers intended, which is this balance of power, the limited government, and empowering the people to actually help in that task of protecting peace and justice, we have instead, as a government, as a people, gone about the business of manufacturing bad guys. Now, follow with me. the prisons are filled with people who do not have fathers. The state usurps the role and the authority of the father in many, many things they do. We document it on this program all the time, welfare as a provision and protection and so forth. Now you have these boys who are being raised without fathers, without discipline, without morality. They're sent to public schools where they're taught. They're just the result of pure random processes. And then they go out and do random violence. We're in the process of manufacturing bad guys. And now if the civil magistrate says we need to restrain the bad guys, while we're manufacturing the bad guys, all they are able to do is to try and neuter the bad guys by taking the guns away. It is a vicious circle, and we have failed to address the very basic root, the heart of man, which is wicked and evil.
And going right to the heart of man, James chapter 4 comes to mind, Dave, where the apostle says, where do all these wars come from? He says, wars and fightings and all this violence comes from the lust that is within you. You desire and you have not. You have so much pride and so much lust in your hearts that you engage in these wars and these dissensions between each other, sometimes within families and within churches. But I'm here to tell you, Dave, I think the reason you've got so much war and so much violence in the world is because you've got a lot of war and violence between people in schools, between peoples and families. If you have families and churches that can't get along with each other, of course, you are not going to have civil governments that will get along with each other. And that, of course, is the root of the war and the violence that we are up against. There's just so much pride and so much lust in the heart of man that he desires these things that God has said you may not have, and then he'll use violence to get it. And that's exactly, I think, why we're seeing such a huge increase in gang warfare, especially in Mexico, but also in America. Actually, Mexico right now is in a state of war. I don't know if anybody knew that, but there were 6,000 people who were killed in drug-related violence in the year 2008. That's double the number of people killed in the previous year. But Mexico is in a perilous state. That, according to this huge section in the Wall Street Journal that came out last weekend, February 21st and 22nd. But what's happening there is you've got drug-fueled violence, corruption escalating sharply. Many fear drug cartels have grown too powerful for Mexico to control. They're coming over the border now. Their tentacles stretch across the border. The Mexican gangs are the biggest organized crime threat to the United States, according to the U.S. Justice Department, operating in at least 230 cities and towns. Phoenix alone had 370 kidnapping cases last year. That, according to the Wall Street Journal. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in dangerous times. I think you need to get ready for even more danger. South Africa turned extremely violent over the last 15 years or so. And I think we're going to see Mexico and America and Europe becoming even more violent, certainly if the Muslim tribes are allowed in to these nations and they engage in their jihad and their typical anarchical exercises, which they do in all sorts of nations around the world, wherever they show up. Dave, as you begin to see men abandon their Christian roots, and we're seeing that in America and Europe and so forth, people are going to operate more according to power than according to love. And that those are the two worldviews. The biblical worldview operates and is motivated by love. We love God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength. We love our neighbor as ourselves. And that's what motivates what we do. Now, obviously, not everybody in America has ever been a Christian, but that was primarily the motivation for the Christian worldview over hundreds of years. But as Christianity has faded in Europe, in America, of course you're going to have these power religions like Islam, and Islam submits not because of love, but because of the power orientation of Allah and the power orientation of their religion. Their religion is power-oriented, as is humanism, as in the sort of religion that motivates these gangsters. In fact, if you read some of these articles, I just picked up another article on gang warfare in America, the Draw of Dead Town, an article in the latest Newsweek magazine. What you find is these guys are really drawn to this power-oriented religion, and they feel like they've got a lot of power when they have a gun in their hands. And because they are so driven by pride and power and lust, of course they're going to be bringing unprecedented violence to this country. So unless these hearts are converted by the power of the gospel, by the power of the Spirit of God, Dave, I don't think we're going to see people motivated by love, but rather motivated by the humanistic religions of Islam and humanism, where power and pride and lust are the primary motivating factors in these guys' lives.
John Adams, one of the framers, pointed out that this Constitution that we try to live under, at least we did until a few months ago, was for a moral and a religious people, that it absolutely would not function for an immoral people. And I suggest, Kevin, that we have left morality and integrity, where we tried to be a nation of laws, and we now have become a nation of corruption. That is, the controlling factor is, what can I get away with? That becomes now the rule of my behavior. What can I get away with? Now, I disagree that these Mexican drug gangs are the biggest threat of organized crime in our soil, because we just spent $4 billion, with a B, billion dollars, funding the voter fraud organization Acorn. I think they're a bigger threat. They don't have guns yet, but they will do everything they can to take away our guns. We have become a nation that is immoral. We kill babies. We celebrate fornication. We have become a nation that is no longer a nation of laws, and that anarchy will always, always, always fuel tyranny. Where order of morality is not being practiced, tyranny will come to usurp its place.
Ladies and gentlemen, where does crime come from? Where does all this violence come from? It comes from the hearts of men who are drawn to power, lust, and pride, and will not worship the true and living God, and humbly submit themselves to Him, first and foremost, in humility and fear. And if that doesn't happen in a nation, of course, you're going to have a lot of these powerful megalomaniacs, whether they be megalomaniacs from Washington, D.C., or megalomaniacs from local drug gangs, or some megalomaniac who's sitting around his home trying to figure out how he can knock somebody off, you're going to wind up with more and more crime and more violence. Therefore, Dave, I think we're just going to have to tell families that they're going to have to act the part of Abraham, protecting their families. They're going to have to act the part of the Apostle Paul, when he used as many civil means as he could to protect his own life as a citizen of Rome. I think we have to use the means at our disposal to protect our lives and the lives of our families. And we have an obligation to do this according to the laws of God. And so therefore, Dave, I think families ought to be willing to protect themselves. And family protection is something that is commanded, I believe. In Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 14, we have Nehemiah standing up and say, protect yourselves, you know, fight for your families, fight for your sons and your daughters and your wives. So we got to have men who are willing to stand up and fight. And I think as Christians, I mean, we're not motivated by pride and lust. We're motivated by love. We love our families. We want to protect our families. And if we have somebody who clearly is acting aggressively against our family, that's clear. You know, this isn't preemptive warfare. This is clear, aggressive action against our family. I think we have an obligation upon that point to act against that perpetrator. We should preserve our families on clear acts of aggression. Now, that doesn't mean we don't concede what we can concede. You get Abraham and Abimelech. Abimelech's men were doing some nasty things to Abraham's family. You remember, they were stealing his property, using his wells, and driving away his servants and his family members. And Abraham was a little uptight about that, so he went and spoke to Abimelech. And I think at points you concede what you can. He conceded some oxen. He gave guys some oxen, some sheep. And he said, okay, here's some oxen and sheep. It's a gift. It's a gift. You can take it. Enjoy, enjoy. But I want you to respect my life, my family's life, and my family's property. I mean, he spoke face to face against this gang leader or this tribal leader named Abimelech. And he was able to establish some jurisdictional boundaries there while conceding what he could concede. But whatever we do, we have to act with the utmost love for our neighbor, love for our families, love for our God, and also in obedience to His laws. His laws must always be mediating what we're doing. And at the same time, I think we ought to be very courageous and full of faith as we act against those who do violence against ourselves and our families.
It's very, very important that every father understand the times that he's living in. Who is the perpetrator you're against? Is it, if it's the state, you know, picking up a gun and pointing at somebody is a good way to get killed and get your family to be orphans and widows, it's probably not wise. There's a time when you may have to flee. You have to understand the time. You certainly have to participate in government without provoking a violent response. You know, as soon as the paper says that your home is a compound, it's probably time to move because the feds are coming down upon you. You know, in the real estate brochures, they call it the Swanson compound. Okay, that's not good. That's a good sign that you're in deep trouble. It's probably a time to flee. But there is a time to fight for righteousness. Now, remember, Abraham, when he went to go save Lot, Lot wasn't even part of his immediate household, but he did stand for righteousness. But he counted the cost, and he went with a powerful enough force that he could win.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and again, folks, what we're saying is there is a responsibility on the part of a father to defend his family from these perpetrators and sometimes even gangs that might try to impose some kind of harm upon his family. But hopefully we can put together a reasonable civil magistrate who can establish some level of liberty and security for the people. By imposing the laws of God upon that society. And the laws of God are primarily going after the murderer and the guy that sheds innocent blood. And that is not happening much in America, unfortunately, but that's the basic civil law that ought to be imposed upon a society. That is capital punishment for murder. You'll find it in Genesis 9:6 and throughout the scriptures all the way into Romans chapter 13. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is a use for the sword. There's a use for guns, but it ought to be used according to the laws of God. And I'd say it's time for us to start to teach our children the principles of the laws of God. And hopefully, at the same time, we're employing the laws of God. We are motivated by love because you cannot separate love from the exercise of the laws of God.
Remember, gun control means never having to say, I'm sorry, I missed you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast, and we've been talking about applying the biblical principles concerning self-defense, family defense, in our lives. And hopefully this has been helpful to you. You can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.
Imagine a summer camp for the whole family. A camp with some great messages that will encourage your family to live and love together the way God has laid out in His Word. Imagine a 5-day camp with some of the best nationally known speakers on the family. A 5-day camp priced from $155. That's $155 for the whole family. We have obtained the use of one of the largest campgrounds in the West for this camp. Scheduled August 21st through the 25th in Glorieta, New Mexico, your family will hear inspiring messages on relationships and loving the family from some of the familiar voices carried on the Generations Radio broadcast. And there will be plenty of time for relaxing fellowship, hiking, volleyball, softball, high ropes course, paintball, miniature golf, horseshoes, shuffleboard, frisbee golf, tennis, ping pong, paddle boats, and canoeing. We have priced this camp so it will be affordable to the largest families with the lowest income in a tough economy. To register or just check out a little more information on this camp, visit our website, renewingthefamily.com. That's renewingthefamily.com. This camp is sponsored by Reformation Church, a family-integrated church located between Colorado Springs and Denver in Castle Rock. Call 303-648-9606 for a brochure. You need to register now at these prices. We are filling up fast. That's camp@reformationchurch.com.